Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today I have Tamir Goodman, who a lot of people know. We're going to find out a little bit more about him today. And he's written a book, The Jewish Jordan's Triple Threat. Tamir, how are you?
Thank God. How are you doing?
I am doing very, very well. So you've written this book, which sounds very, very interesting. And everybody knows about you for your basketball prowess. So why did you decide to write a book?
I feel like I've had an amazing, very unique journey. You know, I'm an Orthodox Jew that graduated from a predominantly African-American Seventh-day Adventist Christian school. I roomed with a Muslim basketball player in college. I was lucky enough to play Division I college basketball without having to play on Shabbos. I went on to play professionally in America and Israel without playing on Shabbos. And I kind of experienced so much through this basketball journey, and I feel like I didn't experience it just for myself, but I went through all that, so hopefully it can inspire other people, and that's really one of the main reasons why I wrote the book.
Okay, so you want to inspire other people that they can do anything they want to do, and they could still keep Shabbos and kashrus and so on, is that it?
Yeah, that's one big part of it, that there is no conflict. You know, some people they misunderstand. Sometimes people think that, you know, Judaism takes you away from reaching your dreams. Spirituality takes you away from you being, you know, the best that you can be, but it's really the opposite. You know, spirituality, Judaism is there to empower you. It's there to give you guidance. It's your blueprint for life. And the more connected you are with your spirituality, the more motivation and inspiration and guidance you'll have in whatever you're doing in life, whether it's sport or work or whatever you're involved in. And hopefully that message will come across through the book.
Well, that's great. That's really, really, really great. So let's hear a little bit about your career. I know a lot of people know about it, but probably people don't know everything about it. So you played in a yeshiva in high school, right? And then what happened after high school?
Well, by the time I was in 11th grade, I was ranked, you know, one of the top players in the nation. I was ranked the 25th best player in the nation. I had a full scholarship offer to the University of Maryland, and at that time, the University of Maryland had, you know, the top team, one of the top teams in the nation. And I had committed to Maryland in 11th grade, and I told them I'd love to play there. They were my favorite team, but I was never going to play on Shabbos. And they said that they will do everything to accommodate that. And when that happened, my life changed overnight. I had 700 media requests just in 1 week, and ABC, NBC, CBS, ESPN, Jerry Seinfeld did a full skit about me on Saturday Night Live. And everything just happened so quickly. And to make a long story short, our small yeshiva of just 60 boys that had a gym that could only seat, you know, 200-300 people, we now had, you know, sometimes 3,000 people lined up outside to come watch us play. The media was relentless, and it was just ended up being too much of a distraction for the school. So at the end of 11th grade, I had two huge challenges. Number one, my school where I went to asked me to find a school that could better accommodate my love for basketball and Judaism. And also the University of Maryland called me into the office. I was already training down there with my future college teammates. And the coach said, you know, based on the way we project you as a player, you can stay here, you can keep your scholarship, be a part of the University of Maryland. But if you're going to stay here, you're going to have to play on Saturday. You're going to have to play on Shabbos. And I said, Coach, thank you so much for this opportunity. But for Jewish people, Shabbos is more important than basketball. And I gave him back the 4-year full athletic scholarship, the number one team in the nation, because I didn't want to play basketball on Shabbos. And they actually went on to win the national championship. I would have been on the national championship team. After that happened, Towson University, it's a Division I school in Maryland, heard about it. They called me up and they said, can we learn more about your religion? And my parents and I sat down with them in the Jewish calendar, and they took notes, and they went to the NCAA and they said, is there any way you could change entire schedule, flight, TV contracts, radio contracts, everything for one Jewish player that can't play from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday? And the NCAA and our conference agreed, and I became the first Jewish person to be able to play Division I college basketball without playing on Shabbos or any Jewish holidays.
So what happened in your career? I mean, if I remember correctly, did you get hurt or something? Because you never really went on to become a big star there, did you?
So I had a great freshman first year, Division I college basketball. I was a starter as a freshman. I won the coach's award as a freshman for best performance on and off the court. But unfortunately, even though my team had the best record that they had in over 12 years at Towson, at spring break after our first season, where we just missed the tournament, my coach called me up and said, unfortunately, he was released and the entire staff was released, which meant that all the entire coaching staff that helped me for Shabbos was now gone. And they warned me. They said, don't stay or the new coach isn't going to be able to accommodate you like we did, but I didn't listen. And the new coach that came in just made it impossible for me to be at Towson. And he, you know, he physically assaulted me. He just made it really, really, really bad for me there, and I was forced to leave.
Knowing a little bit about basketball, I would imagine coaches want to have good players. So why would he want to do that? That doesn't make sense. All because of Shabbos?
I have no idea till this day. I never asked him. You know, ultimately he did get fired, and I was able to live out my dream, and I'm a person that always moves forward, not backwards. And so I was down, very down after that happened for about 3 or 4 months, and then ultimately I woke up and I said, you know what, Hashem brought me to this world to play basketball, and if I'm not playing basketball, I'm almost not alive. So I got myself back in shape, and I signed a contract, 3-year contract to play professionally in Israel. I played pretty much professionally in Israel from 2002 until 2009. I also served in the Israeli Army. I was a Chayal Mitzdayan. I was awarded Outstanding Soldier Award there. I met my wife in Israel. Thank God now we have 4 children. But ultimately, I had just suffered one injury after the next, and so by the time I got 2009, there was no way I could play basketball anymore because of these injuries. So a lot of people, when they look at me, you know, they have the response that you kind of just hinted to. You know, whatever happened to Amir Goodman, you know, the year 2000, I was the most valuable player of the Capital Classic, which is one of the top players in the nation. In 2009, I couldn't even play basketball. So a lot of people think they see that, they hear that, and they're like, ah, it never really panned out the way it should have, but it's really through my injuries and through my challenges and everything that I had gone through and almost losing my dream. Imagine working with something your whole life and then, like, it just being taken away from you because of injuries. You know, there's 2 ways you can react, either negatively or positively. And I said, I've learned so much. Ultimately, I got to live out my dream. When I was growing up, they said it's going to be impossible for you to play college or professionally without playing on Shabbos. I was able to do that. I learned so much along the way. And I gave 1,000% every single day. So I know that I did my part, and Hashem had a bigger plan, and he did, because through my injuries, I learned so much more. It made me much more creative. I've been able to launch the projects that I'm working on now. It made me much more sensitive, much more creative. And really what I'm doing today, I would never have been able to do what I do today had it not been through my injuries. So I got to experience, you know, both sides of it. I got to experience being on top, being on the bottom. You know, I've got to experience, you know, when the doctor looks at you and says, right, there's nothing we can do for your knee anymore, you know, how do you react to that? So now when I work with kids and I train with kids and they're struggling and they have challenges, I can relate to their challenges much more. Had I not gone through all that, yeah, maybe I would have had a bit of better basketball career, but I don't think I would have been a better person.
Okay, so what are you doing now, actually? First of all, you don't live in Israel anymore, do you?
We lived there until 2009. Right now we're living in Cleveland, Ohio. What do I do? I work with Omri Cassidy, who's the first Israeli NBA player. We do basketball camps. We actually have one in Englewood, New Jersey this summer. I launched a special type of TT called Sports String TT. They're a compression fit, moisture wicking, odor wicking, UV protection TT, very similar to Under Armour or Nike high performance garments that people wear to work out that keep their body dry and compressed. I launched the first ever compression fit TT. We also offer them now to the IDF soldiers. We wrote this amazing book. I have a nonprofit organization called Kulanu Israel, where I educate Jewish coaches and players, top-notch basketball, but Jewish philosophy, Jewish identity through the sport, kind of teaching all these coaches that basketball just isn't a sport. It's a platform for education. It's a platform to help kids reach their potential. A lot of what I talk about in the book is not settling. You know, Hashem has so much potential, sees so much potential in every person that he brings down to this world. And sometimes we kind of just go through the motions. But it's amazing what you can accomplish when you try to reach the potential in what Hashem expects from you, not what we expect from ourselves. And that's kind of what basketball taught me in my life. And it also gives the drills and workouts that young athletes need to know to work at that level. And if it's not for them to become college players, the same lessons that they can apply into whatever they're doing, you know, in their life. About, you know, just reaching for the farthest you could possibly reach and how to do that. And a lot of that's explained in the book.
And then who did you write the book for? Like what ages, or, I mean, you know, what's the target audience?
The target audience is for basketball players and coaches. However, the lessons learned are for can be applied to everyone. And if you read the testimonials, you know, we have one, for example, from Maya Bialik. She's an actress. But we also have one from Omri Cassidy, who's an NBA player. And we have different people from different backgrounds and different fields that have been very inspired by the book. So, you know, there's a lot of drills and stuff in there that are specifically for basketball players, you know, how to get ready to play, what's your off-season workout. But the stories and the content and the messages can be applied to everyone, young adults and adults.
Okay, that sounds good. So you feel that Hashem has guided you correctly and that because of the fact that you had the injuries, you never could fulfill the potential you had, your life changed in a different direction, and that was a better direction because it's given you a kind of a goal for the rest of your life as opposed to basketball, which would have ended at a certain point anyway.
Exactly. It's how you define success, redefining success. Many people feel like success for a basketball player is scoring a lot of points, you know, making it to the NBA, being famous. You know, that's one side of it, and I got to experience that, and I've got to see a lot of players and teammates who that was their goal in life. And unfortunately, because that was their only goal in life, a lot of them, many times, they aren't really happy people because what happens once you reach that? What happens when you get to a point where, you know, basketball is just, you go through the motions, you bought yourself a race car, that race car doesn't cut it anymore, you just buy yourself another car, another house, and that's your only goal in life is this materialism, and at some point it gets really sad when the materialism doesn't do it for you anymore. And you know, I've seen the first eyes of some of my teammates, and for me, you know, if I would have stayed healthy, I probably would have been a much better player and got to experience some of that a little bit more. But it was only through my injuries and all the challenges that kind of redefined success. I kind of learned what true success is. And it really isn't about that. It's about being the best you can be under and reacting to everything under every type of circumstance, plowing through that and finding a way to inspire other people through everything that you've experienced.
You mentioned Omri Cassidy, who I believe plays for Cleveland now, right? Is that correct?
Correct.
And obviously he's the guy that's made it, because he made it in the NBA, has a big contract and so on. And does he feel the same way you feel?
Omri and I spend a lot of time talking about this. He definitely gets it. You know, I could tell you this year specifically, just working with him very closely, he probably hasn't, almost every single day that he's had a day off, which isn't many, but when he has a day off, he's always either giving back or somehow trying to inspire kids. You know, for example, when we have our camps in the summer, he could technically just go back to Israel, but he doesn't. He stays an extra 2 weeks after the grueling NBA season and wants to inspire as many kids as possible. He's been putting on his tone every day. I'll give you one quick story. We were in camp, at our last camp.
Sure.
This kid raises his hand and says, Omri, do you have any pregame superstitions? We know a lot of NBA players, they have superstitions before they play. He says, no, Jewish people, we don't believe in superstitions. However, I always make sure to put on my shoes according to the way the Rambam says to do it. I put my right, left, tie my left, and then put my right on. And just for kids to hear that, there's an NBA player that's what's in his mind before he plays. And it's just an unbelievable, just to be part of this Kiddush Hashem. You know, we were lucky enough to count Sfera to Omer last year after the end of the Bulls game. We lit Hanukkah candles this year after the Lakers game. You know, just me working with him and making this incredible Kiddush Hashem, being part of it, has just been an amazing journey for me. And he's definitely an inspiration to Jewish youth, and it's growing every single day in every way.
No, that's great. That's really, really great. Yeah. So the one you named the book, it's called what, The Jewish Jordan's Triple Threat? Is that what it's called?
Yes, there's a triple threat stance in basketball. It's the most famous stance in basketball. It allows an athlete to shoot, pass, and dribble. It's a famous basketball stance. So we take that, the triple threat, and we explain it on a physical, mental, and spiritual level. So, for example, shooting, you know, what does a shooter need on a physical level? What does it take to be a great shooter in basketball? What does a great shooter need to have mentally? And what does this represent, you know, spiritually? So we take shooting, for example, and explain it as preparation. Great shooters need to always be prepared for the great moment. So what does preparation represent physically, mentally, and spiritually? Ball handling, we tie that into focus. What is focus physically, spiritually, and mentally? And then passing, which is the last part of the stance, and we tie that into awareness. And what does it mean to be, you know, what does that mean on a spiritual level? And that way, through the language of basketball, we get to explain these spiritual components and hopefully inspire as many people as possible.
That's really interesting. Very, very good. So let me ask you two other questions. It's not necessarily related to the book per se. One, I've been reading about some new player who playing, I think, for Northwestern, who was a religious boy. New York Times had a big article about him with yarmulkes and tzitzis and so on. What are your thoughts about that?
I'm very happy to hear that there's more and more kids, you know, reaching their potential and whatever it is, and they're doing it as proud Jews. I think we live in a very unique generation that we could do that, and I think that that's what Hashem's expecting us to do. You know, that's how we can make a kid Hashem. That's how we could be a light onto nations. And I'm very happy, you know, to see all this going on, and in boxing and basketball and music. We're seeing it come out more and more and more. We definitely can't take credit for it. It's definitely brought down for us from generation to generation. I grew up hearing stories of all these other Jewish athletes that made great sacrifices for Judaism and great Jewish heroes, and that's what makes our nation unique, that no matter what's going on, we never forget, you know, that it's all from Hashem. And in increasing manner, in this whole digital age, we're able to blast that out more than ever, and I think it's very, very special.
That's great. Second question. I know that people have asked me this question. What would have happened if you had gone to Yeshiva University?
I love Yeshiva University, and I love the work they're doing. And the reason that I did not go to Yeshiva University is because when I was about 7 years old, I looked at my hands. I was in my basketball court in my backyard, and I said, one day I'm going to show the world that you can play Division I college basketball and professional basketball without playing on Shabbos. Like, that was my goal in life. And when I had that opportunity, I did it because I felt like I could make a bigger Kiddush Hashem, you know, knocking that door down so that one day a kid will be able to get to work and they'll say, sorry, you know, you have to stay here and work. And he or she is going to say, I can't say Shabbos. And look what they did for Tamir Goodman. They changed the entire schedule of Division I, all these top athletes, so many people for Shabbos. Can't you let me off of work right now? You know, that's kind of like why I did it. And I love Yeshiva University, but I felt like at that point in my life I could have made a bigger Kiddush Hashem by doing it at the Division I level.
I hear you. Well, it sounds really great. Well, listen, everybody, it sounds like an interesting book, The Jewish Jordan's Triple Threat. Tamir Goodman, good luck to you and continued success in everything that you do. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you so much for thinking of me. You can get the book at TamirGoodman.com, and there's also a very inspirational stories that happened to me throughout my journey that hopefully the readers could apply to their lives.
Terrific. Terrific. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.